Welcome to a very special edition of Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Gina Columbus. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. But today, we collaborated with one of our sister brands, Oncology Nursing News, which delivers news and clinical insights for oncology nursing professionals. We teamed up with ONN's senior editor, Brielle Benyon, and sat down with Dr. Omid Hamid and Grace Cherry, NP. Hamid is Chief of Research, Immune Oncology, and Co-Director of the Cutaneous Malignancy Program at the Angeles Clinic and Research Institute. And Cherry is of UCLA's Melanoma Program. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Hamid and Cherry share the importance of multidisciplinary care for patients with melanoma, how to best manage immunotherapy-related adverse events, and tips for developing trusting relationships with patients so that they feel comfortable reporting toxicities. The key, they both explained, is to establish an open line of patient and provider communication to ensure that toxicities are reported and handled in a timely manner.
From each of your perspectives, how do you define a multidisciplinary approach, especially in melanoma?
The multidisciplinary approach is best exemplified by who is, you know, working on this podcast right now. It has to be supportive care. It has to be nursing for sure. It has to be physicians, assistants, nurse practitioners, and then the physician. At this point, cancer care and immunotherapy has become so complicated that each visit can go into multiple different directions. So every contact that a patient has with a care provider needs to be then brought together and in a group to review the patient. So for us, our supportive care ensures that the patient is psychologically and emotionally able to go through care. Our nursing, from the moment the patient shows up for blood tests, etc., is ultimately interacting with the patient to understand what's going on. And then what's most important is that we are educating each other about what's going on with the patient and what's new in the field in order to get the best outcome for our patients.
From my point of view, the multidisciplinary, I agree with Dr. Hamid saying, the multidisciplinary obviously is most of the time our patients see the dermatologist, they see the surgeons, they see the oncologist, they see the nurses. And to just kind of reiterate what Dr. Hamid said, from the point of contact of when they're diagnosed to the time that they're getting treatment or no treatment or just being monitored, they see a vast of people, and the nurses. I want to just reiterate the role of the nursing as well, because they see them all the time, whether it's a blood draw, giving them medications, or just for information. And communication is the key. Communication as far as letting people know, letting specialists know what they're on and what the expectations are and what to watch out for. I find that a lot of the time, the patients, sometimes their effects of their medications are not quite easily seen, and they can evolve. So it's important communication between the patient and the specialist, as well as the specialists amongst us in communicating that.
That's great. Thank you both. So while immunotherapy specifically, that's been a pretty big key advance in melanoma, there are obviously its own set of toxicities with this class of agents. So what would you say is the best approach for managing these adverse events? And should patients tell their nurse, their oncologist, both of them, and when should they be reported?
So for us at Angeles Clinic, we think that there should be a dynamic discussion. So we tell patients, anything that's different, please feel free to call in to speak to us. So, and also, we send this message together and separately. When my colleague, the nurse practitioner, or the chemo nurse, or the intake person sees them, they note that if Is there anything different? Is there anything going on? And then we educate them that any change from standard in any organ system, they should call us so that we can try and find out if this is an adverse event or not. And then we also, for the most important ones, always go back and discuss it with them and set a baseline. So, for example, colitis is a major concern. We, at the meeting, review again. Your standard is how frequent. Please let us know if it changes. And we actually have a phone line for them to call in at any time to get a hold of a physician.
I tell my patients, or we tell our patients, to report their symptoms right away. I also let them know that they're unpredictable. We don't know when they'll have side effects or what kind of side effects they'll have. I usually tell them the top five, but then there's a whole other array of side effects that can happen. But the main important thing is to report them, and it's our job to determine if this immune-related or is it something else. So reporting it is really important. They can do that by email. They can do that by paging, especially if they're having a side effect where they don't feel well. Like, I reiterate that I don't want them waiting over the weekend to wait until we're open on a Monday. If they have, for example, they have a shortness of breath or diarrhea that's happening every hour. I think there's a lot of, like, people that still think about chemotherapy and the side effects, and they say, oh, that's just part of it. And one really good example is fatigue. And I reiterate to them that fatigue can mean many things in immunotherapy. It could mean hypothyroidism. It could mean adrenal insufficiency. So, again, it's just reporting it right away so that our job is to figure out if this immune-related or not. The other aspect is that they can evolve. Sometimes immune-related side effects are not so black and white and easy to diagnose, or sometimes they're not even, like, evident right away. We've seen neurological toxicities that for the first symptom would be, like, this constipation or this back pain, and we do all the imaging, we do all the right things, but it's not quite evident that it is a neurotoxicity. So it's close monitoring, so we can figure that out. The other thing, too, that I would reiterate is when they go to the emergency room or they see other specialists, it's important that we as specialists or care providers communicate with each other. We've seen people in clinic, and I'm not saying that we know how to manage all of the symptoms, because some of them are pretty bizarre. And even with us, where we have a lot of immunotherapy experience, we could, like, kind of think, oh, gosh, that's what it was. And, you know, like I said, it's not so evident. But I think it's important for other specialists, when they come across people who have had immunotherapy and they're not quite sure, to reach out to the oncologist and ask them, hey, what do you think this is? And one example would be fatigue. We've seen patients that sometimes come to us thinking they have progression of their disease, and they've had immunotherapy, and sometimes what it is, it could be adrenal insufficiency, and no one really thought of to say, oh, you're really fatigued and you're losing weight. So again, I think they're not so clear-cut sometimes, and they're unpredictable. It's a diagnosis of exclusion, and communication is the main key from the patient to us, as well as among the different specialists that come across the patient.
Okay, so that kind of leads into our next question. What are some of the instances when the oncology team needs to call in different specialists, pulmonologists, cardiologists, other specialists, to manage or look at immune-related adverse events? And why is this kind of approach with multiple different specialists, why is that so important?
So for us, for me, I think we're still learning about immune-related adverse events. And in the field of medical oncology, where we're on the front line and we're giving these therapies, we see an increased incidence and have an increased experience. But it's up to us to not only inform our colleagues and educate our colleagues about immune-related adverse events and their toxicities, but ensure that they see the patient while the patients are going through this in order to be able to identify our patients that show up in outside emergency rooms, in their clinics, and for our cardiologists to be able to have these on their radar for a toxicity, for someone who comes in with an elevated troponin, who's young and on therapy, because we're not available everywhere. On the other end of it, when we talk about how to take care of generalized inflammation in solid organs, these colleagues, these experts have had experience in autoimmune diseases for their organ, let's say pulmonologist for lung, cardiologist for like a lupus, myocarditis, etc. And there may be secondary therapies that we are unaware of or we can't manage well, and their expertise can come in. For us, for example, when we've had patients who've had a transaminitis that's not amenable to mycophenolate or steroids, we do involve our hepatologists who are involved in transplant and post-transplant care to evaluate other immune suppressants, etc. So it is a mutual relationship where we can teach each other and we can help each other understand and diagnose immune-related adverse events.
Some of the side effects can be really bizarre and very low in incidence. I think that there's more interest from other specialists in learning about them. At UCLA right now, we have Dr. Eric Yang, who is a cardiologist, and it is recognized that, you know, myocarditis, immune-related, is really severe, and he's taken interest in really studying these patients and making a collaborative effort to manage them. So there is this move where, okay, if you see some, if you're suspicious of something, let's get them involved as far as their specialists, because they may be able to reverse the toxicity, especially in some of the toxicities that can be rapid, such as myocarditis. We want to involve them because they have expertise that we, as oncology, may not have. There may be an underlying infection on top of the immune-related toxicity. So that would be another example.
The next question is, do any of these management strategies of adverse events need improvement? And do you tend to change how you might manage these side effects if it's instead of just an immunotherapy agent or immunotherapy, if it's immunotherapy and targeted therapy combination that's perhaps currently available or being investigated?
Yes, so the combination immunotherapy and targeted isn't FDA approved yet, but we definitely see them in clinical trials, and we do see different side effect profiles. So we would kind of try and figure out, is this immune related, is it the targeted therapy?
I was asking more from the perspective of kind of in a clinical trial setting, because I think it's just nivolumab and ipilimumab in terms of a combination that's approved, but I was more or less looking from like a research standpoint.
I think that there's lots of ongoing data about how to manage toxicities and newer treatment paradigms there. As you can see that both ASCO, SITC, and ESMO have come out with their management guidelines. And I'm sure that as we become more familiar with the toxicities and combination toxicities, those will be updated. So they do need improvement. They need to be better presented to all forms of physicians. Do the approaches change if it's an immunotherapy or targeted therapy combination? Yes, because the differential changes for something like a colitis. Because, for example, some targeted therapies can cause colitis. MEK inhibitors can. We've seen them with BRAF MEK and immuno combinations. Vision change has a differential diagnosis of a uveitis from a BRAF inhibitor or from the immunotherapy, or changes to the retinal layer or retinal venous occlusion from the MEK inhibitor. So there is a need to discuss these things further. Is the differential for a side effect becomes greater, and our goals would be to try and give patients the greatest treatment dosage that we can. So without holding therapy, what we need to do is understand what the offending agent is and then change therapy appropriately. So yes, as we've gone from a single agent where you can clearly identify cause and effect and change a therapy, when we go to combinatorial therapies, whether they be targeted immuno or immuno-immuno, it then becomes harder to tease out what the offending agent is.
We definitely need to research more about adverse events. We have a patient right now who is responding to treatment but has pneumonitis that won't go away. What else can we give? Or is there a marker that would indicate, oh, they're going to be developing pneumonitis? Ways to maximize treatment without having the toxicity be the reason for stopping the treatment. We also, as far as improvement, it would be great to have biomarkers to try and predict, to try and manage better. What other medications can we give aside from prednisone? Are there medications that we can give that won't suppress the action of the immune system? So yeah, there's a lot of improvements that we can do maximize treatment for our patients.
So how can you talk to patients to ensure that they understand these adverse events that they might face, and so that way they can understand also when it's important to talk to their healthcare team?
So we begin by discussing adverse events even before patients are treated. In their initial visit or their first therapeutic visit, there are lots of great handouts that you can give and get to go through, and there are multiple sites that you can send patients to get this information. We ensure that they are comfortable calling us at any time and relate to them that the majority of these side effects are mild, can be managed medically, and will not cause them to discontinue therapy. So from the beginning, education and conversation can engender trust and the ability for the patient to feel comfortable coming back to us and discussing any side effects that they have.
So each visit is an opportunity for discussion and for letting patients know about these side effects. It can be overwhelming for them, especially that first visit that they have with the oncologist. And each contact is an opportunity. The nurse that's putting in an IV can have opportunity to let them know about what to expect, or if they have questions, or to clarify. Each visit that they have for follow-up is also an opportunity for that. I usually let them know the top five. Scan is common, depending on what we're giving, if it's combination or single. So I'll go through the top five, the endocrinopathies, the skin, liver enzymes elevation, pneumonitis, etc. And then I can tell them that, you know, everybody's immune system is different, so the side effects could be different too. I reiterate that most of them are treatable. They have to report it right away. So they have a printed, they can have a printed one. Some patients might want to read that, and some patients don't really want to know, but I always want to emphasize that they should report any new symptoms that they have. They know how they feel at the current moment. If there's anything new, just report it. So it could be monitored more closely, or it could be treated.
And then also, you might encounter this pretty regularly in your practice, but patients are likely hesitant to report some adverse events for fear of being taken off of a treatment that they are hoping is working for them. Do you encounter this, and how do you best handle it, and what advice do you have for other oncologists and nurses?
So we do encounter this. It's rather rampant at times. You counter this by educating patients. You counter this by relating to them that our goal is to stimulate the immune system, and it doesn't matter how many doses, 1, 2, or 10. There's lots of information out there about disease control and tumor control, even after a couple of doses, and continued control once you discontinue a therapy for toxicity. I tell other oncologists and nurses that not controlling these toxicities can be significantly life-threatening. I also do tell them to relate to their patients that the majority of these toxicities are manageable and the patient can continue treatment.
I let our patients know to report it, that under-reporting can be detrimental, or if they're minimizing their symptoms. So if they report it, we can take care of it right away, and they can get back on track as far as treatment. Most of them are treatable. So ignoring it or minimizing it is only going to make it worse, and as far as the side effect. And we don't want to have to stop the treatment because now it's become worse than what it could have been had we treated it before. I also try and like find out what is the reason that they're not wanting to report the symptom, so maybe we can kind of go around what they may think about their perception and try to influence their perception as far as underreporting the symptoms.
Were there any kind of take-home messages that you wanted to quickly reiterate?
So I think this is a great opportunity for oncology nurses, physicians, assistant nurse practitioners, and physicians to continue to be the front line of communication. You establish that communication, you'll have a trusting relationship where you can identify toxicities early and ensure the patients benefit from therapy. It's important to understand that immunotherapies have different adverse event profiles, and these adverse events, as Nurse Cherry has said, can occur anytime, not exactly 3 days after treatment like with traditional chemo, not right away with targeted therapies, and they need to be understood and treated appropriately because this can take some time to resolve. You can remain updated by going to multiple sites, including ASCO, ESMO, the Oncology Nursing Sites, Society for Immunotherapy of Cancer. Many journals have had reviews, and of course, reaching out to your colleagues who have extensive experience, like Nurse Cherry, myself, the majority of medical oncologists who've been involved in the clinical trials.
I would encourage my fellow nurses to know that there are a lot of avenues where they can get updated. There's a lot of free conferences. They're all out there to take advantage of them. Our patients can be quite complex, but working together with our colleagues, our physician colleagues, the specialists, and the nurses, we can monitor our patients and let them know when they report them, that we could help them. I have one final thought for my nursing colleagues. For my nursing colleagues, I think we're the village, and we actually kind of interact with our patients all the time. There's a lot of us there in the infusion rooms. Sometimes the patient may not see the nurse practitioner, they may not see the physician, but the nurse who gives the infusion, when they know that it's immunotherapy that they're giving, they can be suspicious. They can, by interview or by seeing the patient, they can also report as far as they're suspicious of a toxicity. I think we can all work together as far as reporting the symptoms right away.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to the special episode of Enclave On Air. Check back on Wednesdays for new interviews with top KOLs in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and Enclave SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave On Air.